Overflow, Undertow. Written by Silent Walrus. Read by Opal Song. Fandom, Full Metal Alchemist. Rating, teen. Relationship, Ed Roy. Also tagged for, Roy has a little think. Part 13 of Caveat Emptor.
Can't win, I can't reign, I will never win this game without you, without you, without you, without you, without you, without you. I am lost, I am vain, I will never be the same without you, without you, without you, without you.
Roy doesn't go home. Not immediately. Which is a stupid choice, given the chances of getting knifed are not negligible, and probably never will be. But right now, it feels less like a risk than a reward. He walks the Lane Canal to the North Docks, the Rio studded with barges even at night. And as he walks, he finds himself angry. He's angry. Ed knows him quite well, is what Roy would have said. And he thought he knew Ed in all the ways that mattered. What he wanted, what he feared, the things he'd go to the mat for, the lines he wouldn't cross. It's hardly the first time a friend has propositioned him. Not the first time since Ishval, even. But he's not anything more to Ev, for example, than a charming officer good enough in the body and bank to show her a good time. He thought he and Ed had a different kind of relationship. He finds his hands clenching, flexing, and makes himself stop. Then again, barely 5 minutes later, in a frankly embarrassing lack of progression, he takes the next turn off the street and deliberately heads home. He's not some jolted pony. He's 39 this goddamn October. He shouldn't be this angry. Not over something like this. Ed is young. A young man with a love life put on hold for this. And young men's heads get turned by all sorts of things. Ed especially has proven himself several times over to be capable of affection for things no sane person would consider. From homunculi to the 18-foot snake he stuffed into Roy's house. And he even knows Ed's not impressed with his own peer pool. He wouldn't be running through them like an unfixed Tom if there were anything there that held his interest. It's not that Roy doesn't understand the contradictions of attraction. He will never be able to unlove Amstress, leaden, lie-mouthed bitch that she is. He's had his own share of dalliances, before the war, with older men and dangerous women and other inadvisable fumblings. He knows what it is to want what you shouldn't, and furthermore, he's well aware that what turns you on doesn't tend to come from any place of carefully considered rationality. But he thought Ed was smarter than that. There was a story Roy read once, in primary school, about a princess who had a dozen suitors and no family left to help her choose her match. But before she died, the princess's mother had gifted her a magic mirror, which would in its reflection show the lowest moment of that person's life, past or future. One by one, the princess led her suitors before the mirror, and one by one it showed each reflection, revealing them to be secretly destitute or liars or married already. Many of Roy's more outspoken classmates whined about the standards for morality, poverty as a character flaw, as if nobody ever told good lies. And he'd felt quite pleased with himself at the time, when during reading group he'd smugly pointed out that the test condition the mirror was set to satisfy was good royal match, not good person. The teacher added on that the story was, of course, a parable. Know the whole of the thing before you commit your life to it, lest there be something rotten at the core. The list of people who would have no need of such a mirror with Roy is very short. Ed is one of them. And what's all the surface gilding compared to that? Either people know what Roy is or they don't. And those who do? Well, there's no second soul in here, apart from the uniform and the alchemy and the debts and the ichor. Roy has people who love him, but they all love him for knowing who he was before, in spite of what he's done, not in accommodation of it. And for the people who do think so, or who can accommodate, Roy's met them, and he's not left impressed. Why the hell would he want someone who does look at him and goes, "Oh yes, no problems here at all, officer, sign me up." It's even worse than the ones who look at him and see some kind of ultimate bad boy, as if his violence is a leather jacket he'd bought that can be taken on and off and worn in bed on occasion. Ed is smarter than that. He wants Roy anyway. It feels like an equation with no solution. Sometimes it's clear as mud what's going through Ed's head, and other times it's like Roy's thinking the thoughts along with him. And every time Roy understands it, makes it even more frustrating when he doesn't. With someone else, Roy might have thought he'd done something that lit some infatuative spark. But here Roy can only imagine producing the opposite reaction. Given what Ed's seen of him, a couple of fancy parties and decent dinners is not enough to outweigh, let alone impress. He could keep calling this a product of Ed's youth, a young man wanting what young men want, but that thought's starting to feel less sound every time he thinks it, and Ed certainly hadn't agreed with it. Roy has never tried to see his younger self in Ed, primarily because there's usually more important things to mind, but also because there's no point. Roy has nothing to teach him, outside party tricks and hair bows. Ed already had more power than he did, at a younger age than he did, and made better choices under much more immediate pressure. But Roy does remember what it was like, in the slightly unreal land of his life before Ishval. Being, if not the smartest in any room, then almost always the boldest, the one who blew past rules without even considering that they might be there for a reason, the one who always went just a little too far for most people. And if he thought he saw an ounce more of himself in Ed, he might think this is all it was. Ed simply upgrading his attractions to the kind of man that comes after the school rugby captains, the Geons, the homunculi. That he just likes men with scorpions on their hands. But Ed's not an idiot. He's not the kind of person who'd ignore Roy's insides for his outsides. So what the fuck happened to make him do it anyway? It can't be possible that he's that lonely, can it? Roy's going to have to talk to him about it. He has no intention of not calling Ed back. And Ed certainly knows so. He knows there's no way he's dropping this, and pretending nothing happened is not only unproductive but pathetic. They're grown goddamn men. This has already gone altogether too far into schoolyard farce. But when he tries to think of how to discuss this properly, he can only see Ed getting angrier. And Roy is, in fact, old enough at this point to recognize that charging ahead and trusting yourself to be good enough to figure out the right steps on the fly does not yield optimal results. His track record for having difficult conversations with Ed is less than stellar. He'd prefer this confrontation to be one that didn't leave him going, "Great job, Mustang, smacked a 14-year-old in the mouth. Let's get another medal on you." He needs advice. Reza knows how to talk to Ed. Mace, too. And they'll be able to check Roy as well. to help him sort through, reconcile this into something manageable. He's reached his street without noticing, the guards inside the gate giving him curious looks. But if they have opinions on him showing up on foot, they don't share them. He enters the silent house without interaction beyond acknowledging their salutes. He's not angry. Not anymore. He's not. He just doesn't have all the facts. No wonder he can't make the pieces line up. Something's missing. He's missed something. He's missed a lot. Standing in his darkened kitchen, unfamiliar pans hanging on the walls, spices in a box he didn't buy. How can he not have seen it? He can tell himself Riza and Mace haven't said anything, and that they would have if they'd noticed anything, if there was anything to notice. But Roy's the one with an icebox full of homemade food, the one seeing Ed wearing things he's never worn before, Ed coming to him, even before all of this, over and over, pushing into his space like he owned it, for a snake and a pig and a pool, each time with their own reasons, certainly, but not his only option by far. Since whenever, Ed had said. Roy hadn't needed it spelled out further. No matter how Roy excuses himself, it doesn't look good. He can point out how they'd hardly been in close quarters in the early years, explain how there'd been an apocalypse and a coup and all manner of important things going on. Ed was still a teenager for all their extended interactions right up until this year, and about as capable of dissembling as a moldy turnip. Roy can tell himself he'd locked Ed in as an ally, sorted him, and had no cause to spend resources unraveling him for leverage since then. But it's not as though Roy has a job or, in fact, a life in which he gets to just miss things without consequences. If he didn't notice this in his own house, what else hasn't he noticed? He undresses on automatic, stepping back into his body only when he feels himself clinking coins onto the nightstand. Change in his pockets from buying Ed the tea. 440 cents. Ed hadn't known what he was selling himself into when he joined the military. But by the time he refused to return Roy's cash, he knew damn well what he was signing on for. Killing Bradley, to start with, and taking the country after, through whoever stood in the way. No, he can't call Ed ignorant, or young, not anymore. The personal is never apolitical. If Ed made the decision to back him, knowing it would be treason and murder, is it so impossible to think he'd wait a little deeper, too? The end. The music used in this podfic is Without You by David Guetta. If you enjoyed this podfic, you can leave feedback for both myself as well as for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. And from there, you can find a link to the podfic post, and from there, you can find a link to the text post. Thanks for listening!